one statement that you made, what would that statement in your mind, what would you want that statement to be? What would you have want to have said if that's all we were going to remember you by? And through the years, I've collected quotes that came from famous people, and they did not turn out the way that those people meant for them to turn out. So I got a few of my favorites. Some of these I've used before, and some are brand new. How about this one? We'll start with Britney Spears, who said, "I get to go to lots of overseas places, like Canada." Or how about Arnold Schwarzenegger, who said, "I think gay marriage is something that should be between a man and a woman." Brooke Shields, "Smoking kills, and if you're killed, you've lost a very important part of your life." Makes sense to me. Al Gore, "It isn't pollution that's harming the environment, it's the impurities in the air and the water that are doing it." And just to be fair and pick on both sides, George W. said, "Rarely is the question asked, is our children learning?" How about this one, Dan Quayle, "I love California. I practically grew up in Phoenix." Former mayor of Washington, D.C., Marion Barry, said this, "Outside of the murders, Washington has one of the lowest crime rates in the country." Joe Theismann, quarterback for the Redskins, everybody remembers him. He said the word genius doesn't apply in football. A genius is a guy like Norman Einstein. Christina Aguilera said, "I've never really wanted to go to Japan simply because I don't like eating fish, and I know that's very popular out there in Africa." Paris Hilton, "What's Walmart? Do they, like, make walls there?" Winston Bennett, I have to point out, played at the University of Kentucky, said, "I've never had major knee surgery on any other part of my body." Now, these things crack me up, but honestly, I could use Derek. I've worked with him long enough. I've only been with Jimmy a year, but there's plenty of material there. And Charlie, my goodness, could I come up with the quotes? But the truth is, if you were writing a book called "The Dumb Things Our Preacher Has Said," that would be a thick book. I just got an amen from my wife. I'm fully aware that I have made some crazy statements. And there's a character in a parable that Jesus told that only makes one statement. This kind of stuff gets my attention. He's only known for one statement. The only thing he ever said, and we find it in this parable that Jesus told. And his comment, the more you examine it, it's completely natural, but it's still an interesting comment. The person I'm referring to is the older brother of the prodigal son. While his younger brother gets all the attention, no matter what he does, the older brother, he didn't run away from home. The older brother, he didn't squander money on prostitutes. The older brother, he didn't waste his money on blackjack and loose women. The older brother, he didn't cause his father sleepless nights and a broken heart. He just stayed there at his post doing what he was supposed to do. And his conclusion can be summed up in two words. Why bother? Why bother? Well, let's read about it. And again, it's the part of the story we never, as preachers, never get to because we're focused on the younger brother. But check this out, Luke 15. "Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father." Here's the only thing we know this guy says. "Look, all these years, I've been slaving for you, never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him." That's all he ever says. "My son," the father said, "you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." At our vacation Bible school, when me and my buddies were little, they had a snack table and different things on it. And at the start of the snack table was a whole bunch of oranges. Well, who wants an orange when you're that age? And I didn't want an orange. And so my there was a sign at the oranges that Miss McClure had put there that said, "Take only one. God is watching," trying to scare you from taking more than one orange. At the other end of the table were some Little Debbie snack cakes. Now we're talking. So me and my buddy got a sign and put in front of the Little Debbies that said, "Take all you want. God's watching the oranges." I think with some of the situations we go through in life, the devil would have us believe that God was nowhere to be found, that he was paying attention to something else or busy over here and not paying attention to what we're going through, that God was somehow not watching. Of all the questions that get posed to preachers, and I think my staff would agree with this as well, of all the questions that we get asked, the one question that is asked most often is the question, why? Why? Which is a question asked in the Bible in a lot of different situations. The angels at the tomb of Jesus asked, why do you look for the living among the dead? Jesus asked, why do you call me Lord and not do the things I say? The Bible asks, why do you wait? Arise and be baptized. Jesus asked, why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the log in your own? The Pharisees asked Jesus, why do you eat and drink with sinners? Jesus on the cross asked the why question, didn't he? My God, why have you forsaken me? But those who ask the why question today generally ask it in regards to suffering or injustice. When we find it hard to accept that some really bad people seem to continuously prosper and some really good people seem to continually suffer, then it becomes a real question. I've asked the why question. Believe me, I have. I ask it when my mamaw died. I ask it when my little nephew died in his crib. I ask it when things in my life went south for a while. Even though I never had any delusions that I deserve anything special because I'm not, the question why is one that I've asked. Marshall Leggett preached for years in Lexington. Did you know him, Charlie? Marshall Leggett was sort of a legend. And he told about a man at the Broadway Church in Lexington that gave a testimony. The man was dying of cancer, and he wasn't that old. He had a $500,000 home. He had two beautiful children, faithful wife. And he gets up into the pulpit after finding out he has cancer, and he says, all my life, things have seemed to work out for me. But now they tell me I'm about to die. And the only thing I can say to you is, all my life it's been my job first, my family second, and the Lord a distant third. He said, now that I'm not going to be here much longer, I understand the priority order. It needed to be God first, my family second, and everything else a distant third. So the church began to pray for him. Their hope was a miracle. They prayed. This man, after he gave his testimony, 2 weeks later, he died. And the question for God from the church was, why now? Here's a guy who finally gets the order right, finally understands that it should be God first, his family second, and everything else third. Now that he gets the order right, Lord, why now? You ever ask that question walking out of a doctor's office? Walking out of a hospital room or an emergency room or a funeral home or a cemetery, raise your hands to heaven, cry out to the Lord, and ask, why now? I remember hearing Ray Bennett preach when I was a kid. He was one of my preaching heroes, and he said, we're going to talk about this why question tonight, so I thought, I'm going to get a satisfactory answer. No, not even my buddy could give me the answer. Oh, we could talk about the fall of man and talk about sin and the consequence of sin, but no one can really answer the question except to say what the old hymn writer said, and honestly, it's not enough. We will understand it better by and by. Is that comforting to you? So the skeptic concludes, what's in it for someone to be good anyway? Bad people get away with things. Some guy cheats and steals and gets promoted. The honest Christian, he takes a pay cut. The harder we try, the harder we're hit. While the guy in the world who thumbs his nose at God climbs up the corporate ladder, gets all the breaks. Children are born to abusive monsters disguised as parents, while good couples in our church want to have a baby and can't. Athletes and movie stars making all kinds of money, while a single mom elementary teacher can hardly make ends meet. The question then goes from why to why bother? Why bother? And that's what the old brother of the prodigal was feeling. Check it out one more time. Luke 15:29. Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never even gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. Translation, why should I try? Why be faithful? Why bother? Let me give you three reasons why we should bother, all right? Number one, we're looking in. Number two, others are looking on. And number three, God is looking down. Let's unpack each one and spend a brief moment with each. Why bother? Number one, we are looking in. You have to live with yourself. Numbers 32:23 says, be sure your sin will find you out. All of us raised in a preacher's home have heard that verse quoted more than once. Reputation is what others think of you. Character is what you are in the dark. Integrity is a lost word in society today, isn't it? Are you a person who can be trusted? You know where the disciples went when they were let out of prison? They went to a prayer meeting. Where do you go when you're let out? When you're out of town, away from the people of the church, and you think no one's watching, what do? When you're out there and you think in your head, no one's ever going to find out about this, what do? If you could be assured that you could do anything you want, and it'll never come to the light of day. Remember, you'll have to see yourself in a mirror, even if there was no heaven and hell, just to be able to live with yourself. Have a clear conscience would be worth doing the right thing. I've been sorry for doing a lot of things in my life. Never been sorry for doing right. The poet wrote, I've got to live with myself. This much I know. What I say, what I think, what I do, where I go. I do not want to stand someday beside life's setting sun and sadly hate myself for all the things that I have done. Why bother? Because I have to look in. That's why. Number two, other people are looking on. It's my favorite verse, Acts 16:25. You've heard me preach it many times. About midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing hymns to God. And here's the key part of the verse. The other prisoners were listening to them. I told you about my police buddy, Gary Knoll, last week. And obviously he was tuned in because I got this citation in the mail from my police buddy. And it's got all kind of stuff written on it. It says, Mark Fugate did unlawfully operate, and then he just wrote all over on it. And it's got, this is your last warning. So I'm pretty sure Gary's out there listening again today, and he wouldn't tell you this, so I'm obligated to. He pulled a man over once for speeding, and before the guy could say a word, this guy's dressed in a tuxedo, and he tried to blurt out something, and Gary said, I don't want to hear a word. You're driving two times the speed limit. You're getting a ticket. And the guy said, let me explain. Gary said, no. You're getting a ticket. Well, this went back and forth until the man got a little bit hostile. Well, you don't mess with Gary Knoll. So Gary cuffed him, arrested him, put him in a cell, and said, lucky for you, the chief's at his daughter's wedding. He'll be in a good mood when he gets back. And the guy said, don't count on it. I'm the groom. Now, I've always wanted to do this, and now I get to do it in front of thousands of people. Gary Knoll, here's what I think of your citation, brother. How about that? Jimmy will be preaching next week because I'll be in the Dearborn County Jail. So obviously others are looking on. This Acts 16 verse about Paul and Silas singing and the other prisoners listening. We went to Dave and Trish Adams' daughter, Allie, her graduation party. And it's the first time I'd seen this, and I think a lot of kids do it now or maybe did it before Allie even, but they have you list your favorite scripture. I didn't have one. I got several, but I didn't have one. So I had to land on something, and I landed on Acts 16:25. About midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and singing, and the other prisoners were listening to them. I love that. And they didn't hear Paul and Silas cussing, did they? Might have heard us. They didn't hear Paul and Silas complaining, did they? Might have heard us. They didn't hear Paul and Silas acting depressed about what God had led them to. They might have heard us. They didn't hear hopelessness in their voice. They heard singing. Did they hear doubt? No. Disappointment? No. For the first time in the history of that jail, they heard a song. As soon as you identify yourself as a Christian, you're under scrutiny of the people of this world, and listen to me, they have a standard even if they don't live by it. If they know you're a Christian, they have a standard for you. They do, and they're watching. Maybe not for themselves and their choices in life, but they know what a Christian is supposed to look like and how a Christian is supposed to respond to life's difficulties. And it's not just the world that's looking on. How about the little eyeballs in your house? I'm fully aware of that. I mean, I could be all over their case on a Sunday morning before church and just yelling at the top of my voice, and then they'd hear me greeting people at church and wondering, where's that man that was screaming at us at home? They're watching. And then if it's not the little eyeballs, how about your spouse, Sheila Ross, and her husband, Larry? They got into it because she wanted him to go to the grocery with her, and he didn't want to go. True story, as she's checking out at the grocery, the cashier asked her cash, check, or charge, and then noticed a TV remote fell out of Sheila's purse. So the cashier asked her, do you always carry your TV remote with you? And here's Sheila's quote, no, but I wanted my husband to come with me, and he wanted to stay home and watch a ball game coming on later, so this was the most legal, evil thing I could think of to do to him. That's cruel and unusual punishment right there, isn't it? Cold woman. I think the interactions we have with each other draw attention. I mean, think about when you're out in a restaurant or the mall or on the golf course. I have been with Christian people at a restaurant and watched them abuse a waitress who's of no fault of her own, didn't bring the food when they thought it should be there. And in my head, I'm thinking, you know, this would be a terrible time for you to invite them to your church. I've been golfing with guys who have literally thrown their club farther than they hit the ball. And I thought at the time, man, that guy watching over there, this would be a terrible time to invite him to your church. Matter of fact, if you're a club thrower and you invite them to your church, don't tell them you go to Hillcrest. You tell them you go to Mount Pleasant. I don't know if any of you Mount Pleasant folk check in or not, but if you do, tell them you go to Dive. How about that? When I think of the impact of others looking on and the lost trait of integrity, my favorite Bible characters who stand strong in that area are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You should have Jay Anderson preach his little Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego sermon to you sometime. That's a treat. You're familiar with these three teenagers, or as my daughter Jayla used to say, Shadrach, Crabshack, and Tabednego. When they were told to bow down to an image other than God, they said, no, they're not going to give in. Truth is, they wouldn't bow, they wouldn't bend, and they wouldn't burn. Rich Mullins wrote lots of good songs, and we've sang and played together, and one of my favorite lines from one of his songs says this, you'll meet the Lord in the furnace long before you meet him in the sky. Steve Rapecki, a Christian businessman from California, I heard speak once at Southeast in Louisville. He told about attending an insurance convention, and the key speaker kept taking the Lord's name in vain, and it went right through him. Every time this speaker would use the Lord's name, he just cringed, and it was constant. And this place is filled with hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of insurance salesmen. It got to where he couldn't take it anymore. And I don't know if you've ever been in this kind of setting, and you just felt like, I got to do something. I got to say something. Right in the middle of this guy's presentation, Steve Rapecki stood up on his chair, and he waved his hand. And he said, sir, I would appreciate it if for the rest of your speech, you would leave my Lord out of it. And he sat back down. And that guy didn't take the Lord's name in vain one more time. And after the meeting, more people came up to shake Steve Rapecki's hand than they did the man who delivered the speech. Even the world recognizes those who are willing to take a stand. I love what the Bible says about Daniel. Remember, the king got duped into creating this crazy law because of jealous politicians. They were jealous of Daniel, who was working his way up through the ranks the right way. Mark Twain used to say it, and he was correct. There's nothing more annoying than a good example. And Daniel's example got to these boys. And so they had this king create this law. Remember the law? Anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days except to the king shall be thrown into the lion's den. And what was Daniel's response to that ungodly law? Don't miss this. With his windows opened, not behind closed doors, but the Bible is specific. With his windows open, we read this. 3 times a day, Daniel got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God. And here's the key phrase, just as he had done before. Daniel knew what we all need to know. The heart bows long before the knee ever bends. His story proves again, nobody can ever make right what God has said is wrong. No man can ever make wrong what God has said is right. That's true of kings with ungodly edicts. That's true of presidents who sign ungodly bills into law. That's true of preachers who try to alter God's plan for salvation and the church. And that's true of you and me. We can never make right what God has said is wrong. That's why I love our student ministry, Derek. We can be proud of our kids. I've seen them at school. They don't hide the fact that they love the Lord. They're part of the church. They wear their Hillcrest shirts. They congregate together. They don't keep their faith in the shadows or sweep their beliefs under the carpet every time they're challenged. They realize other people are looking on. And it's important to show that we live what we believe. I love the end of Daniel's story. You're familiar, right? He gets tossed into the lion's den. They put a stone over the mouth of the den, and the king goes home for the night. All you Bible experts, did the king have a good night's sleep? Now, I can't hear you out there in TV land, but you should be saying, no, he didn't sleep at all, because he didn't. Even on that plush palace, perfect sleep mattress that Paul Harvey advertises, the king tossed and turned all night because he cared about Daniel. So as soon as the sun comes up, the king goes to the hole, has the stone taken away, and calls out to Daniel. And if I can translate for you in Hebrew what Daniel said, it would go like this. What's up? Remember that Super Bowl commercial? Everybody gets up. What's up? It originated right here. Hey, Daniel, are you okay? What's up? Got one foot resting on this line, one foot resting on this line, been laying against this big line all night long. What's up? I think this is so cool. He's as calm as a cucumber. He didn't toss and turn all night. And I'm no expert on lions. I did a little bit of study. I do think they're cool from a distance. But I did find this out. A hungry lion can eat 30% of his body weight in one sitting. That's like an average man eating 200 quarter-pound hamburgers for lunch. And how about this thought? The roar of a lion, which is frightful, on a clear night can be heard up to 5 miles away. Did you know that? And Daniel didn't even flinch. Now, I read a skeptic who wrote and explained away all of the miracles in the Bible. And guess what he says about this one? This is my favorite ridiculous explanation. Comes from a historian who says, well, these lions weren't hungry. Well, he must not have read the end of the story, right? Verse 24, at the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered and crushed all their bones. Man, there's a lot of side lessons there. How about this one? Be careful who you marry. That'd be one lesson. The overriding thought through this story is that Daniel knew others were looking on, and he knew it was important to do the right thing because others were looking on. Darcy, from one of the greatest resources a preacher can have, comes Daniel's story from my children's Bible story book. Check this out. Daniel, in the lion's den, slept with the lions. Now, how have you been? I've been fine, slept like a baby. God is good, and I don't mean maybe. The lions were hungry, you will agree, but they preferred a bigger meal than little old me. Now, you're probably wondering, was I scared? Well, I admit, when in the pit at the hungry lions, I stared. But then the Lord calmed my fears, and I don't mind admitting. The lion's roar became a snore. Why, they were nothing but kittens. It was no surprise to me that the lions would not bite. God promised he'd watch over me if I just do what is right. Now listen, friend, do not bend. The dawn is just in sight, and I'll be fine when morning comes because the lion sleeps tonight. So if you were to ask Daniel, why bother? He would answer, I need to be true to myself because I'm looking in, and I need to be faithful to God because others are looking on. And here we'll close with this thought. Why bother? Because God is looking down. Man, here's one of those verses that gives you goosebumps if you take it for what it's worth. Nothing in all creation is hidden from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of him to whom we must give account. What was that Bette Midler song? I'm not a Bette Midler fan at all. Matter of fact, an example of one of my worst afternoons ever would be to have to listen to Bette Midler music at the Asian Pearl. That'd be a terrible afternoon for me. And she sang, God is watching us. And I love that lyric. If she'd have stopped right there. But then she had to add to it and ruin it. God is watching us where? From a distance. That's bad theology. Not watching from a distance. God is as close as the mention of his name. Remember that little chorus we sang as kids? Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see. Oh, be careful, little ears, what you hear. Oh, be careful, little mouth, what you say. What's the catchphrase at the end of each line? For the Father up above is looking down in love. I don't know if it brings you conviction when you consider that God is looking down or if it brings you comfort. It brings both for me. If God is watching, that means he's seen every stupid thing I've ever done. That's pretty convicting. But he also sees every scar that I have from all the difficulties in my life, and that's pretty comforting. And what I need to tell you this morning is that no matter how hopeless the situation you find yourself in, no matter how depressing the circumstances, no matter how lonely you may feel, mark it down. Your breaking point can become your turning point. I've dealt with addicts. I've dealt with couples who are on the verge of divorce. I've dealt with people who just got a cancer diagnosis. I'm telling you, your breaking point can become your turning point. God is looking down. You know, I've felt this question start to develop in my mind many times. Why bother? But I've concluded if there was anyone in the history of the world who should have asked that question, it's probably God. Give my son up for these people who are unworthy, unappreciative, many of whom will never even accept the sacrifice that I've given. Why bother? But that's not what God asked. God, again, only responds in grace and mercy. Let me close with this. In 1918, after World War I, the United States took up money for an orphanage fund in Europe. They put a man in charge who would eventually become president of the United States. Herbert Hoover was sent over, and they opened a great orphanage for children whose parents were killed in the war. One man came in, and his eyes were sunken in the back of his head. He had a little girl by his side. Her stomach was protruding. Her arms looked like sticks on a kite. They obviously were starving. And the man said to the head of the orphanage, "Can you help us?" The head of the orphanage said, "Nah, I'm sorry. I wish we could, but we can only help orphans, and your child is not an orphan." Father said, "Well, I was in a prison camp. Her mother was killed. We have nowhere to go. We have nothing. Surely you can help us." And this person, man, they stuck to the letter of the law, and they said, "I'm sorry. I feel for your situation, but she's not an orphan. She has you, and we're not capable or qualified to be able to help you." And the father, you could see the wheels turning. He said, "So if I were to die, you'd take care of my little girl?" He was told yes, because then she'd be an orphan. He went out, got a gun, and took his own life. True story, I don't tell you that to justify anybody killing themselves, but understand this. This is real. Jesus knew the only way we could live was if he died in our place. So when you're tempted, like your preacher is, to ask, "Why bother?" Look to the cross. Look to the cross. You'll find your answer there. Amen.